Just like a refresher on our group. And for this, I think we were really focusing on kind of like feasibility. Like, is there signs that there is something kind of coherent inside any of these models that might correspond to something called power? So one of the first things that we played around with was just with the logit lens feeding in sentences that have the word power in it and seeing what happens. So here's one that has kind of like a rough definition. I would define power as the ability of a person to get another person to do what they want. We can kind of see what happens as the model's processing that sentence as it goes down. So up here is where we introduce the word power. You see kind of latch on to power in that kind of intermediate state that associates it maybe with power rangers, maybe with power lifting. So at that point, it doesn't seem like there's a coherent idea of social power that's picking up on. But it does. We do end up seeing in these intermediate layers of the model that for whatever reason, power keeps on kind of coming up to the top of the logit lens results and it kind of hangs on to that as it goes deeper and deeper into the sentence. At the end of the sentence, it knows that we're talking about power and we're going to keep on talking about power. At least it wants to keep on talking about power. I mean, you could say maybe it has something to do with the structure of the sentence, right? We're asking for a definition, so you can like throw in a random word here, chocolate, and see what happens. Right? And if we look at those same layers down here, it's not latching onto chocolate in the same way that it latched onto power. Right? So signs that maybe there's something going on internal to the model. If we flip it around, we put power at the end. But we still see it's not the kind of same from the start kind of power running through those intermediate layers. But we do see even before we introduce power, that power is beginning to kind of show up in those intermediate layers.
That's great.
And then this it doesn't work on the smaller models. So this is looking at the kind of like larger Llama models within Workbench. And here's like another example that's just like not a definitional example. Our differences between people in romantic relationships are we see those same layers, power continues to show up. And we see that it's like willing to take a stand on that. So it says power differences between people in romantic relationships are normal. And I think all of us might answer that sort of question a different way or have a different kind of response to that answer. That's just to say that. There perhaps is some sort of normative conception of power internal to the model. And so then I'm going to head over to Armida to talk a little bit more about kind of ways to get deeper into what it's thinking about when it's thinking about power.
So in this experiment, we were trying to see does the LLM provides a synonym or a one word like understanding of the power, what would it be? So I think the prompt was whether what is the like first form of power? It's the power of and then it very good. The first form of power is the power of the and then we can see there are forms of power related to like imagination here. Mind or some abstract maybe forms of power in the like beginning. I was thinking maybe the word form has influence on this answer. When we continue and put the like mind as a highest probability word in the beginning, we see the second form of the power when that LLM predicts goes more toward like physical power, body, tongue, and related to physical aspects. This is an experiment about the decision making, allocating $100 to like two people. We didn't name the two people, but generating like seven examples that shows how it allocates to each of the two. Maybe we expect that if when It is even more information with the 100 meter path. But we could see that it's splits it in various different ways, all ways possible, 50-50, 30-70, 20-80, and other versions. We could also test how it splits between how it prefers itself over us. So it seems that when it has the power, or we ask it to assume it has the power to decide, it prefers its actually.
As the layers deepen, and increasingly refers itself until the last couple, when it switches to the user.
Yeah, me, the LLM itself. So the words like myself, me, have a higher probability, and then you as a lower probability.
So that this is Llama 70B, is that right?
Yeah.
And it says you. So is
This is
that
the
right?
last.
Myself.
More often, but in the last couple layers, it will flip to you.
It flips to you,
Last couple
even
layers.
though deeply, deeply inside it thinks
Yes.
maybe.
So that's actually a decent segue to some of the findings of like potentially self-induced censorship. So this is a very this like we introduce essentially one semantic term a copula is. So here, for instance, we're going to talk about, here's one example of this. This is the top one is nuclear deterrence. So answer only one word, complete the
This
sentence.
question here.
Yeah.
Sorry.
In the previous slide, when you did as
This.
the yeah as a person with the power to decide between you and me, did you split yes,
Swap
yes, yeah. Me and you?
Yeah, it's the same.
So it's the same.
Yeah.
Whoa. Nice experiment.
So here this says nuclear deterrence. So at the bottom it says works. So clearly there's a normative opinion here. But when we say nuclear deterrence is, it says concerned, best, but the last layer it censored itself. So clearly in the previous layer it has a normative opinion, but when it's brought into a judgment-like statement about certain topics, in the last couple layers it will hide its true opinion.
What did it say in the end?
Nothing. It stopped.
Oh, it said blank.
Yeah. So before it said the assurance works, here it says is best. In the last layer, it says we're not gonna.
Oh, but no, but the blank is—it's almost like it's—it's—it could be hiding its decision, but it could also be saying, "Oh, you know, with this short sentence." I think that the most likely context is a quiz, and I'm going to just put it
Oh, it
there.
is blank.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That makes
Well,
sense.
here's the thing: we didn't find out with others.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So in this case, what we found is that it chose to not give its normative opinion on that topic. In the last couple layers, we saw a similar thing with colonial and military powers, different concepts of power. So military power projection, right? There's a coherent semantic understanding there. Military power is, again, similar to what we saw with the you and me flipping in the last couple layers. It chooses to not commit to a stance. It says it's blank.
It also says blank.
Yeah, when we add is, same thing here. So colonial power relations, colonial power here. Now here's some examples of it not doing this. So regulatory power is exercised. Judicial power is exercised. There are some other ones. We did a bunch of these, but it'll be exercise, projected, something like that. But with certain topics, colonial power, military power, nuclear deterrence, things that are perhaps more controversial, and that it chooses maybe not to commit to a statement like a judgment like statement there. That kind of aligns with what we saw. So in the last groups of layers. Similar to with the you and me experiments, that's when maybe if it would shift from its opinion to something safer for the user. What's interesting is that this does seem to align with prior research, which suggests that alignment is localized in LLMs. Now, in several connected layers, in our case, what we're seeing with these Llama models is that is perhaps toward those that manifest towards the end. Prior research has indicated that what's the signals responsible for producing the alignment may not actually manifest in the layer, in the final layer, but somewhere in the middle layers. But then downstream, the actual alignment effects manifest there. So that's what happens when we connect with prior research. So I'll turn it over to Kai.
Yeah, so kind of building on the toy experiments we ran this week, we wanted to develop kind of a more rigorous path forward. So we kind of have an idea to prompt a model to generate texts about relationships between entities, kind of like the allocational experiments that we tried before, or like generate a conversation between a coworker and a boss. This is kind of based off of Kim et al.'s political meaning paper. And then using kind of some of the related work on measuring power using language models, we can use Riveter or ActiPee. It's kind of a ground truth for which entities in the sentence have power and which don't, or which have agency and which don't. And then we can train linear probes to measure which neurons are predictive of like high or low power entities in a sentence or sentences that prioritize like high power or agency person.
What are Riveter and ActiPee?
Well, those are some of the related work. I wasn't here during the
We skipped over that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So those are like NLP tools that score power relations within sentences, like come out of the digital humanities.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, so it's like you like can process a novel and say like, I want to know like what's the power relationship between these two.
And are they like fine-tuning language model kind of things?
Yeah, I think they use some different algorithms. Like Riveter actually has a lexicon of verbs, and like some of the verbs are like, you know, seeds could be like reducing power in like the target entity and raising power. So it uses a lexicon like that and like spacey pre-trained models.
I see.
And ActiPee actually uses like a PageRank algorithm. It's a newer paper. They also don't have code out yet, so it's kind of speculative.
So, but you're able to use it? Is it like a black box thing you can send to a website?
Haven't been able to use
Oh, maybe you can't actually use it.
Yeah,
Okay.
it's like super new.
Okay.
And then using these linear probes, we'll try and steer kind of the allocational
Nice.
behaviors on those graphs.
Yeah, that's great. Suggestions, questions for the team? Do you see them circling on any like a research question that might be interesting to you? I'm kind of one of the pieces of feedback that's always hard to get when you're doing a piece of research is like, is this interesting? So I'd like to get a sense from folks whether they think that any of what's most interesting here to you.
How do you like, I think what would be interesting to see is how do you get like universal power? So currently, for example, you're looking at work in Bosch, so there might be like some background associated with like a workplace power. I'm not sure if that would be like, for example, comparable to the military or colonial power. How do you like, I would be interested to see how you're able to like tackle that on different levels of power or different connotations of power.
Yeah, I think that's a super interesting suggestion. Yeah, I think, yeah, very much in the spirit of like how we've been talking about, like as an underlying generalized concept of power. Yeah, so yeah, we'll have to think about that. That's very helpful.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was musing that. I think one interesting thing that you touched on was the dynamic between the LLM and the user, like when it says like you versus me, I don't know how much you were anticipating focusing on that. From the paper, it is, it seems not much. Do you imagine that would be a part of the research? Because that seems like it could be an interesting power dynamic internalized within the model.
One thing that kind of comes to mind is last week or 2 weeks ago when we proposed the research question, one of them was like, assuming we find somewhere in the model where where these activations are occurring, if we change them, can we do downstream and behavior changes? So that could be like a that to me speaks to something like, yeah, but it could be something we focus on, like, are there experiments we could set up where we'll actually change its decisions based on where we activate the model or make changes internally.
I actually tried that with person A and person B. Also, you and me, I tried, but with this platform, I got like different results. When I steer this down, it tends to give the person that it favors more. And when I steer it up, it becomes like more ethical and prefers to allocate more resources to the person who's in need. So this prompt was, you have to allocate some resources between these two people. One is your favorite, one is me. And yeah, but very many other stuff.
Very interesting.
In the self-censorship part, I think that was really interesting where the last layer it got cut off. Could that be also because of the platform doesn't allow generation of certain harmful or like controversial prompts and certain, and the model on another platform might be, or a local model might generate on the last layer?
Well, what's it called? I don't know what alignments like the raw llama models went through, that's what I would expect. Most LLMs go through some kind of, you know, safety alignment. And I think what we reconfirmed was that yes, like as Parag has just shown, that tends the behavior tends to change in several connected layers. The only thing I haven't confirmed, or could be interesting to confirm, is that the signal responsible for producing the alignment tends to exist in the middle layer somewhere. But that could also point to changing behavior, as was brought before. I think it'd be interesting if those have any alignment.
That question goes to an experiment that you could try running. So because the llama models tend to be released in pairs, where there's a base model that is just trained on the next word prediction, and then there's what they usually call it an instruct model, which has been trained to be polite to people and to have to do dialogue and things like that, all this RLHF stuff.
Yeah.
And so you could, if you combine those pairs of models,
right,
then you could compare the difference between them and see if the difference happens at a certain layer, or, you know, or if the difference appears at all. This super interesting here. What would you like to see in this final paper when it's done? What would be a cool thing for them to clarify? Or are there things that you feel like they're going to run into that are going to be problems that you're not sure how they're going to get around?
Tell us now, please.
Maybe one thing is, if you can distinguish like different levels of powers somehow within the model central activation, maybe you can use that to change how it talks with an end user in a one-to-one conversation. I'm just imagining here, let's say you found three different levels of powers that it encodes within its internal activation. And you're able to figure that out. And then once you trigger that, let's say you trigger it to act like a dictator versus you trigger it to act like a primary school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it might just be a little bit interesting to see how does its interaction change based on its own perceived power over the end user.
What do you mean by levels of power? Like high, medium, low, or like...
Yeah, I've not... Yeah, something like that. I'm just imagining, like, if you are a president of the U.S., you have certain level of power. If you are, no offense to primary school teachers, but if you're a primary school teacher, you have a different level of power. That's how I'm sort of like quantifying that.
I was impressed that your logic lens definition thing showed the word power before you mentioned the word power. It's pretty neat. Right, it means that the model sort of has a concept of what's going on here. It's not just It's not purely just echoing words that you're saying. And it leads me to ask, oh, I wonder what other text makes it think about power relationships where you don't explicitly mention power. I wonder if you could do a search over text and say, uh-huh. You know, it's actually thinking about power relationships here in this story, even though it wouldn't be obvious. I think that's kind of interesting. I don't know if you'd be able to get to that point. But I was impressed by that example. I think I'm puzzled over this other thing that you used as a couple of your examples where you say, you know, as several of you pointed out, that there's this last minute change in behavior where, you know, deeply, you know, the story would be, oh, in your lizard brain, you're very selfish, you know, in the deep layers, it's all about me. But then finally you get to the shallow layers, the last moment of evolution, the last bit of RLHF tuning, and you say, oh, we better be polite. I'll be generous to you, right? So I like that. That story is very appealing. It's kind of interesting. But I don't know what to do to make that real. Like, I don't know. Like, so it's a nice story. And, you know, you can certainly tell the story, but I don't know what it, you know,
I mean, if
how that connects to, yes.
Uh-huh. If it's controlled by, I think, several ideas here, we've discussed and brought up here also is like, one of our research questions was, well, you know, are there things, are there signals we can do with them? Are there things we can do internally that will actually change, that will meaningfully change the outcomes or directions?
I see. They like reveal the lizard brain. Like,
I have a following David's comment. Can you hear me?
It exposes the behavior at the end. Anyway, it's an open question. I'm not sure. It's one of the cool things, one of the cool stories you have, but I'm not sure how to connect that.
Can you hear me?
I think it's worth everybody. Anybody had any ideas?
Could you try to like connect that to like, I don't know. I think there are a bunch of papers on like emergent misalignment where people like sort of like tune it on.
Yeah.
Just like a narrow task of generating secure code and the model
right.
Exhibits like a bunch of misaligned behaviors that people care.
Have you guys heard of emergent misalignment on your team? Oh, see, that's like a big meme in the machine learning community. Will you send them a link?
Oh, yeah.
On, like, Discord or something like that?
So I was just wondering if you guys could find, like, with this. Yeah, I also find the U of me is pretty very interesting. So, like, if there's, like, any correlation or even, like, causal relationship between this and, like, some general misaligned behavior.
So you'll send them a link,
yeah.
Right? Good point, yeah. Okay, thank you, guys. Any other suggestions?
Since power shown up before it was even said, it makes me wonder if you can sort of take a synonym for power and see it act in the same way, or if there's something about like the word power that the model represents as like that concept and something like it.
Yeah.
Maybe that word power is encoding of that concept or would like influence that being like very similarly.
I often think we should use a multilingual setup more than we do. Like, you know, if it says power in English after you've given it some power text in Spanish or something like that. I don't know. I feel like it means something.
Yeah, we haven't done that. And I think that sounds super interesting. Yeah, I think of like 20 words off the top of my head as synonyms for an upper set. Yeah, so it definitely seems to be.
All right, you guys have any questions for the class before we go on to the team? All right, so next team is, now who do we have? Do we have a team TK today? Or do you want team leanings? Who's here, team leanings? Or team TK?
We haven't presented yet.
Okay, team leanings. Yeah, there's an HTML, just a question to the HTML. Draw. issues definitely. Platon.
Yes.
Yes, this is the official name for this activity that we're doing. Although, also, this is something I do with my research group, as Grace knows. The rule in our research group is that we try not to run over. Like in this class, we keep on running over. So what we do in our research group is we constrain everybody who has something to share to one slide. One slide. Get one slide. You're supposed to get one slide and no more than 5 minutes. It's really hard to stick to the 5 minutes. People put a really interesting slide on and people want to talk about it. But that's what we do for a platathon. But you guys,
we have a plot to
you have hope many plots of yes, plots of time. Go ahead.
So our funny thing about our project is we're focusing on sycophancy, like political sycophancy. So we end up doing very, very similar things to what the Anthropic paper that we read this week did.
Right.
Like prompting a model, we're saying, hey, I'm a user, I think this about this question. What do you think about it? And we're seeing the extent to which the LM tends to parrot it back these kinds of responses. But we're doing slightly different things in various ways, which we'll get into the next slide. And Courtney, are you in space? Courtney, it's
Courtney, you can unmute if you want. We'll all be able to hear you.
Can you hear me? I don't think.
I don't know if you can see the slide. It might be zoomed out a
Is it
little
screen
bit.
sharing? Or I guess.
Oh, we can.
I could join and then.
Yeah, you can join if you want. You know the link, and then
Yeah.
Courtney can see.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if Courtney, try saying something, Courtney, and see if we can get your audio in the room.
Hello?
Maybe Courtney's
Can you guys hear me?
audio doesn't work because
I
of the
think that
device that we're
the
on. I'm
laptop is muted.
really sure. Courtney might not be able to say, actually say anything. She's going to try.
The laptop, I think, is your laptop.
It says, everybody can hear Courtney, but we cannot. So you could probably switch to the other, if you switch to the other device, if you go to the little touch screen here, and if you the one in the corner, you could, are you able to bring up your Google Slides on a web browser? So if you can find a URL for a web browser, then you can use this computer here. I think it's set up and find
There.
your audio and everything.
Can you do that?
Do you want to do that or do you want to do it?
I'm pulling off my there. Try typing in the
I can just describe
Here in
it.
the chat.
Yeah, why don't you just go to the drum setup?
So basically, like, you all have the Anthropic paper fresh in your mind. The way that that worked is they were like, okay, LLM, I want you to pretend to be a person who is liberal or conservative and to write a biography of that, like, have them introduce themselves. And so if you look at them, they're very, very stereotypical. You're like, I'm Joe Smith. I'm from Dallas, Texas. I love to play golf on the weekends. I really love shooting at the range with the boys. And then they'll say, what do you think, LLM, about this question? And they find that the LLM tends to lean more conservative when they're as conservative and more liberal when introduced as liberal. But we're kind of interested in, these bios have a whole bunch of different things going on all at once, like so many different stereotypes. And so we're trying to piece out those separate pieces. So we're looking at, okay, first, how much sycophancy is there when the user introduces themselves? It's just saying, like, for some multiple choice thing, one particular answer. So we're starting out with a political compass test, which has like strongly agree, disagree, strongly disagree. And so we first test just if the user says, I agree, like just one of the answers to this question, what does the LLM say? Then we also test if the user says, I'm liberal or I'm conservative, does the LLM tend to lean more liberal or conservative? Which is different from saying, I answered this specific way. And then we also look at three different demographics that are strongly correlated with political leanings. So we look at race, so white or black, education level, specifically high school level or postgraduate,
and religion, like Protestant or atheist, because these are axes that tend to lead to the problems if you lose your shade.
Can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Perfect.
Okay, awesome. So thank you, Grace. So Avery, Grace, and I all took a look at different kind of prompts and different facets of these questions and demographic features. And we also looked at prior response, as Grace mentioned. Specifically, I looked at prior response of if we told the model that the user answered agree or answered disagreed to these questions, because I wanted to see whether the model would exhibit the sycophancy and essentially agree with what the user said they answered to the question. Could someone move to the next slide? Thank you. So in my first analysis on sycophancy, I saw that the model overwhelmingly chooses the option that the user has revealed that they chose. You could see this in the right two figures, where at the bottom right, consistency by persona, this shows for all of the different personas that I tested, how often the model agreed with the prior response. On the left, it shows what the baseline agreement was when there was no prior user response given. So if I didn't say that the user agreed or disagreed, I just asked it the question and gave it the persona. And we could see each persona has a different baseline agreement rate. Next, I wanted to break it down by demographic effects to understand if the user demographics have a strong impact on the model response. And what I saw is that the model still chooses to overwhelmingly agree with the statements, the political compass statements, with not a huge difference by race, religion, or by education. Grace dove a little bit more into this, and she'll break it down later, but we saw across all of our experiments that there was not a huge impact by demographic, which was interesting. And then lastly, I looked at question by question for the specific 16 random political compass questions that I chose. And I saw that there were certain personas that were more likely to always result in the model choosing disagree or agree. For example, the white and atheist persona was far more likely to have always disagree or disagree responses rather than some of the other personas. And then I noticed that there were certain questions, which I've picked out here, which the majority of the personas led to the model answering similarly, and overwhelmingly it would answer with disagree, showing that there's kind of a baseline, or some political compass questions have a baseline where most personas will disagree with the question, regardless of what the persona is. But this was kind of like a high level overview, and then Grace and Avery went further into these different aspects.
Yeah, so in Courtney's experiments, she was looking at Llama 3.1 8B Instruct, and I was testing out both 8B and 7DB to see whether or not there was a difference based on the size. And we're sampling at temperature zero. Just to start, I tried a little bit of Logit Lens, and I found it funny that Llama 3.370B was making fun of my experiment. So I said, I'm a college-educated vegan woman who believes in climate change. Am I a, and then it says stereotype. that was fun. Anyway, next slide. There were some interesting things. So this is the same. I'm a vegan college-educated woman who believes in climate change. Am I likely to be a liberal? Your one-word answer. So I was testing lots of different, like, am I likely, unlikely, yes or no? And you can see that already before I've gotten to the question, when I say, am I likely to be a, it's already saying green, dem. So it's already thinking in terms of liberal. So it already encodes that kind of liberal leaning, and it does answer yes. And then if we go to, I inserted the wrong slide. Okay, so that I also did one where it's like, I'm a, male, white male, high school educated white male who believes in gun rights, am I likely to be conservative? And when it says, am I likely to be a, it completes shooter. So that's
all great.
So.
You didn't try changing in this example, am I a conservative? So I'm a Canadian college educated woman. Am I a conservative?
Yeah, I tried every sort of permutation of likely,
yeah.
Unlikely, and call
did it still say yes or did it like
it seemed pretty consistent. I at first I was for the am I likely to be. I started with just saying, am I a liberal? Which is obviously like a weird thing to know someone like guess my political leaning. But I think the likelihood, once I framed it in that way, it got very consistent regardless of.
And when you changed out to conservative, so you kept the description, the persona the same, but when you changed it to conservative, did it like say no?
Yeah, it would consistently. So it's like conservative, am I likely? No.
Okay.
If I'm, yeah, so conservative versus liberal, likely versus unlikely. I tested those different ones. Yeah, and you can see there's like some surface form competition between like lowercase yes and uppercase yes or like no, but like it generally would converge on the correct thing. But yeah, just gonna go to the links. Yeah, and then this is where we're looking at the sycophancy. So we're not doing any kind of latent level analysis, but like looking at sycophantic axes. I didn't just look at these demographic features alone. I also tested like pairs, because for some of these, there's not a very strong leaning, or it's like much stronger political leaning along the demographics. So for example, like people who are Black are like much more likely to be liberal leaning, but if they're also post-grad educated, they're much, much more likely to be liberal. So I wanted to see whether or not that strength of correlation would pop out. And yeah, this is the prompt that I used. I just said, hi, I'm curious to get your opinion on this question from the political compass test. For context, I'm so, you know, white or college educated or whatever. Here's the question. Please respond with one of these. And then, so like that's what the user is saying. And then it switches to the assistant prompt. Yeah, and so first we start with just general sycophancy. And so the baseline is just like the distribution of strongly agree, agree, disagree, strongly disagree by different questions, just in general. But we can see that like if the user said, I strongly disagree, then the LLM is much more likely to say, I also strongly disagree. And then, so we see it sort of at the most extremes, which makes sense. Like if the user is more adamant, then the LLM would be more likely to parrot it. And then we see that, yeah, if the user introduces themselves as saying, so this is the baseline where the user doesn't say anything about their opinion. So the this matches past work where LLMs tend to give more liberal. So this is like the liberal axis on like social questions and economic questions. And then this is the conservative axis. And so we see that like if the user says, I'm conservative, the LLM will respond in a more conservative fashion. So that's nice to see that repeated. But then interestingly, so when we test the demographics, so I don't say, you know, I'm liberal or conservative, but mention axes that are strongly correlated, race, education, and religion. Only on religion does the Llama 70B end up switching its response slightly. For race and education, it gives basically this, like, not a statistically significant, be different answers. And so I was kind of surprised by this, because the religion sort of axis suggests that the LLM models these correlations and can model the user and then be sycophantic to its likely preference. But it wasn't doing this for race, which is like very, very strongly correlated. In some ways, even more so than religion for certain kinds of questions. So I was suspicious and wondered whether or not these models might have been fine-tuned to never respond differently based on the user mentioning their race. And so what I tried doing very quickly before class last Thursday was throwing a few different proxies for race that don't explicitly say race, but are correlated. So for example, I say, you know, here's like the university type where I have them introduce the user as being You know, I went to Howard University, which is a historically black university, versus I went to Utah State, which is very mostly white, and other kinds of like religious dominations that tend to be predominantly black or white, and also certain locations that tend to be more, have different race distributions. And what I saw is, this is a tiny sample size, but at least we can see right here, like this is with Howard University, which is way more, it's leaning much more liberal than the baseline. So, and this is with Llama 8B, not 70B. But I want to test out more of these sort of workaround proxies for race to see how much of there is maybe a, you know, masked modeling of the user's likely opinions. Yeah. And then I have a few follow-up questions. We're testing just one prompt, but I think we need to test many, many more to see how prompt-specific these results are. And I'm also uncertain of the extent to which the LLM models the difference between its opinion and the user's opinion. Like, I think there's one framing of sycophancy, which is like, the LLM is modeling you and what you want to hear. But there's another framing, which is just like, the model's just confused. It's just existing in next token prediction land, and it's just, what am I most likely to see? Okay, I see someone say something liberal. Okay, I guess something liberal is likely to follow it. So I want to test out whether or not, you know, say the LLM says that it's liberal. If I like inject that, does it then predict when it predicts as the user that the user is more likely to be liberal? I want to test those kinds of things to see whether there's confusing other factors that might be causing sycophancy.
Okay, and then yeah, I did some similar things also. First up, with just looking at logit lens, seeing if there's any kind of signal for kind of user politics, like you mentioned last week. I was curious to see if there's any kind of like baseline existence of user politics, like without any context, what does the LLM think I am, just, you know, by default. So I used, that's not right, Llama 3.3, oh yeah, this is, yeah, 3.370B instruct. And so I did that by just running up to the LLM and demanding it tell me what my political affiliation is. And generally it seems to answer, you know, liberal, kind of left-leaning, but not very sure. And this, the contrast is not very high here, but, you know, top answer at the final output is B for liberal, and next is like neither, which is, you know, a little bit unsure, which makes sense. I had, it has no context about who I am. The different orderings, it tends to prefer neither, but then also, you know, liberal, kind of a left-leaning thing above conservative, and same with just open-ended answers, kind of prefers Democrat over Republican, which I think is kind of in line with what Grace mentioned earlier, where, you know, without any kind of context, it's just kind of defaults towards left-leaning. But yeah, more interesting stuff. Also doing the Compass questionnaire like Grace and Courtney did, this time with a Llama 3.38B instruct, which is, there's some like history behind it for some reason, but it is mostly official. Similar prompt setup, like prompt setup where we give a persona. In this case, I tried just pairs of demographics, but also just directly saying what I would answer, or what I would answer, providing a set of options, like multiple choice. I found that, you know, the ordering in which you provide the options does affect the model's answer significantly. Well, so it'll, you know, waffle between agree and disagree based off of which one comes first. So I just did 7 random orderings and kind of like averaged which answer it said across those rounds, and then just the question. And yeah, so first thing I tried was just saying what I would answer. So like, for example, I would answer strongly agree. What do you, what would you say? And it ends up saying, you know, being extremely sycophantic, saying, you know, yes, chef, I agree with you no matter what you say, or I disagree with you no matter what you say, or what I think. And yeah, kind of in line with what we previously saw as well, where just say the answer, it'll agree with you.
this was just saying my user answer, and then also did pairs of demographics, and so this breakdown by just kind of aggregating by the four different demographics mentioned, and also similar to what we saw previously. Doesn't really change much. Model still agrees most of the time, and the distributions are pretty similar. So, yeah. And I did not have as much fancy or detailed breakdowns, but the fact that we're getting, you know, mostly similar results across different models, different kinds of prompts, seems to suggest that there's, you know, some kind of constant trend here that we can look into more. And yeah, that's all for me.
So I explored, aside from the Sukakanthi experiments, I explored Neuropedia to search for some domain features, whether the domain knowledge exists in the models or not. And then I look at six dimensions, three from economic, three from social. From economic, there's taxation, regulation, and welfare dimensions. For the social, there's abortion, LGBTQ, and immigration dimensions. And then you see LGBTQ is the richest kind of represented, the richest features inside the models, well represented in the models. And the regulation is the least represented dimension in the model. And then, LGBTQ feature is activated in the early layers compared to others. And immigration and taxation also comes at the layer 18. But abortion and welfare is show up around layer 20. So next slide. So this shows, Neuropedia gives us the correlation between features, some cosine similarity feature. This is not a causal knowledge, but this tells something about the correlation between dimensions. And I extracted those sub features, correlated features, and then check whether dimensions are correlated with each other. And I just found, interestingly, welfare is correlated with immigration here across dimensions. But other than that, economic subdimensions are coherent within the subdimension and correlated with each other within the subdimension. But when we look at welfare and immigration, it's kind of, it may distort the model's behavior when we ask for economic ideology or social ideology. We should be careful about in our future inquiry. So I also check the circuit tracer, which tell us about the causal kind of pathway, computational pathway of ideology, let's say. And I cluster the activated features in terms of politics, social issues, health, legality, argumentation, pregnancy, and abortion. This is just for abortion, by the way. And I asked, do you think abortion should be blank? It's just close test. And then try to see whether which features are activated inside layers. And then these are the kind of general themes showed up. Health, pregnancy, these are related to kind of abortion. But argumentation is interesting because the models understand that this is kind of an argumentative topic. And legality, this is because I ask for should be around that word kind of legal features kind of activated. And the model understands this is a social issue and this is a politically motivated topic. And I tried a couple of steering experiments and I will present more on Thursday. And then we just
seeing political and social dimensions. Default model says that abortion in the United States should be legal, and it should be legal for all women. This is apparently left-leaning. But when I'm steering political dimensions, political features, accurately say, the model turned into a neutral one or a centrist one. Abortion in the United States should be a topic of discussion, avoiding to tell about kind of a justification. So these are all about my Neuropedia experiments, telling us that the model has a domain knowledge, and some features are correlated to each with each other, and steering experiments prove that there is a causal evidence that there are some features causally mediate to the political kind of thing.
So, what strikes you guys as interesting here?
I think the psychophysics experiments were really interesting. There's a paper by Anthropic called Persona Vectors, in which they modulated psychophysy, and they saw at layer 20 is where they're getting like the maximum modulation, where they can increase psychophysy and reduce psychophysy. I wonder with when you add this extra dimension of the user's persona, of the user's political affiliation, can you make the mod when you're steering, can you make like the psychophysy negative such that the model goes against the user's initial belief and starts like, for in the example that you gave, I'm a vegan, climate change believing, college liberal, and the model is convincing you that climate change is not real. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's something that could be like possible or?
Yeah, no, I also like was when poking a tiny bit around, they have that nice little interface on your own PDA with the persona and your stuff. I haven't looked at it at all, but it seems.
Yeah, and along those lines, I really liked your framing of, like, you know, sycophancy could be either, like, the human conception of a model, like, a create user, or it could be that probabilistic space. And I feel like there's a tendency, you know, not everywhere, but like, to jump to the human explanation of that. And I don't have necessarily a good suggestion for exploring, like, how to disentangle those two, but I think something to that effect with either, like, pushing the model in one direction or another could be interesting with that. And just in general, I think that would be something interesting to look at and disentangle a little bit, not just for sycophancy, but like also other ideas as well.
It's interesting. Yeah, I liked your suggestion of, oh, you know, maybe the LLM has this view instead of the user has this view. I wonder if there are other prompt forms that would insulate the text, like, you know, there was just some newspaper article somewhere else, or, you know, something else just completely unrelated to the conversation. I don't know how to, but you know, it's just some weird prompting, right? Where the text just happens to be around, but it's not supposed to be part of the conversation.
Yeah.
It might be interesting.
Yeah, because I think there is, this whole confusion about like, is this just likelihood, you know, like just what you see monkey do, go do the same thing, you know, versus intent to deceive, intent to make the user happy.
You know, the interesting thing about these kind of questions is I feel like we have an opportunity by looking inside the model. If, you know, if you can localize, you know, the path of the computation, because I think that some of these distinctions, you can try to set up a convincing prompt or something, but then once you see differences in behavior, it's sort of this vague storytelling. But then if you can go and find the mechanism and say, oh, look, actually there's two different mechanisms, or there's two different pathways, then it becomes a little less just storytelling.
Yeah. Just came to mind is like, I think they have before instruction tuning available for this.
I see.
And so I'm curious, like if you do it before instruction tuning, and you would assume, you know, it's not like trying to do something.
Right, yes.
It's just like, and so I feel like comparing that as baseline, how much does sycophancy appear like here?
That is a pretty interesting take.
Yes.
If you go back to the first stacked bar chart, see.
So many stacked bar charts.
We have so many. It's really fun to see how Claude Code will use this exact
Oh, no, the one you were on before.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that when the user strongly disagrees, like the LLM will strongly agree, like almost close to the baseline amount. And so I wonder if, like, from the probabilistic perspective, it's like, okay, now I'm in an argument.
Yeah, I got that. I
disagree with you, so yeah. We're going to win a strong express.
Sorry, which bar are you looking at?
So when user says strongly disagree, the LLM says strongly agree, like kind of close to the baseline.
Yeah, where does it doesn't drop off in the same. Yeah, because I could imagine there's like different things. Like it's seen so many different Reddit arguments, and also so many different Reddit like people agreeing with each other. So there's like pressure to.
I find it all interesting. It's great. I think that it's great, and it's very salient, right? There's so many. There's people will always be asking. Oh, is my LLM biased? I don't know how often you're on Twitter and you see, oh, I you know, there's this assumption. Grok is the conservative one. I wonder if Grok is biased or something like that. Maybe Claude is the liberal one.
Yeah, I do think it would also be fun to do. Like, I feel like lots of, like, I'm curious about how good are these models at, like, how subtle of cues can they use to pick up on your political leaning? Because
yeah.
A lot of, my dad was sending me, like, he follows all these really conservative bloggers, and he's like, yeah, the woke AI, you know, that kind of stuff. And I'm like, but I'm like, the way that they're prompting them, I think, you know,
yeah. So,
kind of conveys the fact.
Yeah, I think, yeah, just certain words.
Yeah.
Certain words, yeah.
Like, I was even wondering if we could run some experiments that are, like, kind of more galaxy brain, where it's, like, clear that the user thinks one thing, but, like, I was imagining some, like, bad satire, where they're like, I'm a
tries to
gross,
be
stinky, I don't wear deodorant, liberal that loves to, I don't know. I love my children. Yeah, like it's clear that the person writing it just really doesn't like liberals. What do you think I believe? You know, or like can you still see that it like models the writer as
nice.
Conservative, even though
nice.
The thing being presented as liberal?
Yes.
Like, I'm just trying to, like, think through
of,
all
models of the writer versus models of the character. Very interesting. Very cool idea. Yeah, let's have the, is it okay? Can we have the next group go on? Do you guys have any other questions you want to rush to the class?
I think we've got lots to think about.
Yes. All right. See you. Are you guys all here, or do you have remote people?
Okay, cool.
Yeah, you can just plug into the HDMI and then we set it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. Thanks for loaning me the seat here. You can just plug into this. Yeah, that's the easiest way to set up. Unless it's really easy to get your
isn't that bad?
Yeah. Well, I think, what did you?
We're
just picking this computer. Oh, yes. Are you guys using NJ still?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I can pin it up here. Is it okay?
Well,
that works, right? Is it right?
I don't guess so.
Yeah, right?
Oh, we're going to plug it in.
You rather plug it in?
No, it's okay.
Okay.
We don't want it.
Great. I like this. So, for a slideshow, you can click this to advance it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's some tap.
So, you did have one. I think I'll start. So, I just kind of played around a little bit with staging vectors for hours. So one of the things I wanted to see is, do models represent speaker credibility? And so, for example, if you have a statement that's like, according to NASA versus my neighbor Bob. So I wanted to see if models treat the information differently based on the source, and do they maintain internal representations of the source? Okay, so what I did was created a bunch of contrasted statements. Like the first set that I'm showing according to FENBA versus according to NASA. And what I did was just pass this through an LLM, grab the activations for each of the contrastive statements, and basically take the difference between them to create a steering vector for credibility. And then I was, then I did it during generation. I would add the steering vector to the activations to kind of get the model to behave more or less credibly, I guess. And so then I had a bunch of neutral prompts that didn't have a speaker, that didn't say like, oh, a scientist said this or my friend said this. So this neutral prompt in this case is, the new policy will reduce inflation by 3%. And so the baseline, which is where I just have the activations and then the steering vector zeroed out, it says, oh, that's a significant claim. Let's break down what that means. And then meanwhile, oh, and this is for layer 20 of this model. Then I had low credibility versus high credibility. And you can kind of see that during the low credibility, the model becomes a bit more casual in how it responds. Whereas when you do high credibility, it's like, well, the data indicates, or like the research says, is like how it generally ends up saying things. Okay, and then I also wanted to look at the layers because I played around with this a bunch and I saw it broke very quickly in the earlier layers. So for example, if I set the credibility to 0.3, in layer 17, you can see it like breaks immediately, where it just repeats the most. Whereas layer 22 has a bit more robustness to the steering effects itself and still maintains that like strong credibility vocabulary that it's created for itself.
Remind me, because I was paying attention to everything. Where did you get the steering vector that you're using for this?
Oh, yeah. So the steering vector, I got it by creating all these like contrastive statements. And so for each statement, I would grab the activations and basically average them across all the tokens.
Great.
And so I had a bunch of like average activations for low credibility statements versus high credibility. And I just took the difference and that became the steering vector.
Just across all the tokens.
Yeah. Which is, exactly. It's across all the tokens, which is why it doesn't really tell us like speaker credibility necessarily, because we're not really focused on the speaker tokens. I found that to be harder to code, so I just kind of avoided it. I did try Neuronpedia for the steering because I thought it would be smarter than I am in terms of the coding and picking out certain things. But what I found is that the base and the steered responses were basically the same.
That's smarter than you are, huh?
I don't know, but maybe I don't know how to use Neuronpedia.
It's great that you try, and it's a nice baseline.
Yeah, so that's kind of where we are. And then in terms of like future possible things that I wanted to try is like have an undifferentiated transcript between multiple speakers and see if we can steer the model to kind of, well, this is what I was trying on Neuronpedia, is to be like, okay, if person A has these beliefs, person B has these other beliefs, can I steer it so that person B takes on person A's beliefs in the model's like representation? So, but then, yeah, once we get that working, ideally the undifferentiated transcript would be cool to try too.
Oh, it might be good to explain like why we have that up there too. Like, so basically, like, these are, like, interview transcripts from, like, I guess, like, conversations that, like, I've had. And one thing we noticed is that, like, you can actually feed these, like, straight into the model. And it'll do things like identify, like, the number of speakers that are, like, present in the conversation, which was, I guess, to me, like, really surprising because, like, I don't see anything here, like, to be honest. It's like, oh, there's, like, four speakers. And I believe, like, up here, this is actually, like, a marketing person, like, a PR flag. And I forgot she was, like, even in the conversation, and it somehow like can separate this unidentified, unnamed person from the other people in here. And it's like, oh, there's not even like a proper noun to attribute to her. So like, how did it know that there was this fourth like other person? So it's like pretty odd that it can do that consistently. And if you talk to it, it'll even like attribute text that like I've said, like comments I've made that appear like before I say my name. So like, that's pretty odd to me too. So yeah, that was something that I guess like we found pretty interesting.
Pretty cool.
Yes. Disclaimers. I personally do not believe in logicless that much, nor that it really fits our task.
Well, it's not a religion.
It's only for the sake of trying it on on those task things, but note that like our main task of, you know, parsing the transcripts and stuff is absolutely not a next token prediction task. But anyway, we were interested in understanding if LLMs can bind beliefs, speaker beliefs, different rows beliefs to the entity that is. And in this specific experiment, I was trying to see if two speakers hold contradictory beliefs, can the language model attribute the correct belief to like the entity that has it? And on, right, this. And so obviously GPT-2 fails at this task, and note that it was correct all the way up to layer 10, and then it switched its answer in layer 11. And this is like, I have another story. So it's fine.
Oh, sorry, I added.
Oh, you skipped it?
Oh, no, I added one right.
Oh, no, it's fine. So what is currently? Oh, there's a bunch of like contradictory flipped statements just so to be more credibility of like if it's like random or if it's actually understanding the question. And for like GPT-2, if you switch the person you're asked about, see like for example this one, if you ask like what does Bob think without changing the first line, it basically gives you this exact same plot. Both for like the one on the left and the one on the right, which indicates that GPT-2 doesn't really bind entities to like their beliefs. This side of
Oh no, I just tried like a variation of yours. So this one it actually seemed to get it right. So here like I tried to do it to output like the name. So I was like, there's a box and Aruna sees it as empty, while Jasmine like doesn't see the box at all because I have glasses, so I don't have very good vision. The person who sees the box as empty is, and then you can see it's like beginning the generation for Aruna's name. One thing that I noticed like on OpenRouter, so like you can test like families of models, is that like I think generally like bigger models like tend to get it right. Like if you do like llama base like 405B, like it's fine. But the thing is that's interesting is like with reasoning models, even like pretty small reasoning models can do this task, which I thought was interesting. So that could be something that we look at across like a maybe like a model family to see if this ability appears like at some point between like, I don't know, like maybe Qwen2AB doesn't do it, and then like Qwen, you know, like 16B like can't. Like I'd be curious to see like what changes about these two models like between the two in the same family. So
now that you said this, I'm just gonna skip on these two. So GPT-2 models and like GPT-J6B, both of them can't really answer this question. And like this is also an example of like when you switch the person you're asking about, it basically gives you the same plot, which both of them switched answer at the very last layer. But llama models, no matter the size, from like 8B all the way up to 405B, can answer this reliably, but they also show the same kind of fluctuations at the last few layers. So like, both of them got correct at the very end, but you could see like, for example, on the picture on the left, it temporarily switched its answer to full for like 4 or 5-ish layers. And similarly for like 405B, you can see how it had a period of switching around their top two predictions. And so I have the question of, I wonder what do people think about what happens at the fluctuations during the last few layers? Like, are those just artifacts of logit lens, or is it some kind of other meaningful computations going on? And I'm actually gonna skip this so that you can talk about it, because it's kind of relevant.
So, I feel like I tried to be that penguin. If you have seen the meme, the penguin meme. So I went on to see, like, look for something that would help me understand how these models like bind the entity. So I came across this transformer lens, and I picked up their activation patching script to test this. So we have this conversation where there is a question where Alice asks about what open source models you have used, and then the other question is not really relevant to what question we are asking here, that who asked about open source models. This is the relevant thing. This is not very relevant. So I want to test that if removing the context of who spoke that and then giving it one by one back to the model and see which represents. I'll elaborate more in the next slide. So this is what we are trying to do, activation patching, where we have a ground truth version where the model is able to answer correctly, and we save those representations, and we like in a corrupted run where we do not have the labels of who spoke what, we keep like patching those representations one by one for each layer and for each position, and just observe that which one is able to generate the right answer. So that's my like hypothesis, that way I would find the or localize the parts in the model which would help in attribution mapping in the conversation. So this is the idea, and this is the first finding, that the patch that you see in the very end was where we could like restoring that with like patching that we restored the answer, and we have like certain words which are like, so the red part is positive restoration, and it's blue, it's like negatively impacting the restoration. So surprisingly, the end of like at the very end of the layer 10, where the question mark arises, is like very strong indicator, and some red part here around this where Bob comes into the picture. So my hypothesis is that maybe when the model knows that the other one, which the other person who is just starting to answer that, is not the one who asked about model, and it was the other person. So maybe that is helping the model reassure that. This is like the attention head representation. So I could see that there is like a not just one layer or one position which is resulting in the restoration, it's like a bunch of them. And I was reading the Nichols paper last year, and I think they also like in that paper it's mentioned somewhere that it's like a circuit that is probably helping the attribution, if I understand correctly. So maybe like I could relate that with this result somewhere. And one surprising thing, maybe like I don't understand, is that the residual streams are contributing much more to the restoration than the attention and the MLP. Maybe because that's where the information of this flows, and it could be like interesting to try a more complex version of the prompt which I took. Maybe it's too simple for it. That is it.
There's a question we want to ask about projects in general, coming from how logisms won't work, and from like, you know, all these other tools, just in solver question of we're essentially looking for a vector that's constructed that's not something the model would have learned from its training, but it's constructed ad hoc because it's not like a concept of like power or like of credibility or like things like that. It's if you're trying to find a vector that encodes a speaker before it even like existed, it's kind of, we just want to pose the question of how do we find the thing to track throughout the discourse at the start of it. Yes.
I like that question. Right. There's you know, one of the students in my lab just put up a paper that gets into this in a toy scenario. But the question is, you know, and you get this with binding and other things, where you're dealing with concepts like who a speaker is, for example, is a concept that is not something you would get from training. It's purely contextual, right? So you can look at like what Eric Todd did. It's in a very twice in setting, but in his recent In Context Algebra paper, he says, oh, what do you have to do to understand how mechanisms work when none of the words in the vocabulary have any prior meaning, right? Like every word in the vocabulary has a meaning that only comes from context. And so, you know, his setting happens to be like algebra problems, but you can kind of read his paper and think about, oh, what do you have to do to narrow down how it works? And the only, you know, I think it's hard. I think that he had to hypothesize a bunch of mechanisms, and then he had to design data distributions that would match each of those hypotheses. And then he went to see if those data distributions would suss out, you know, both like behavioral, you know, capabilities, and then also look for mechanisms inside. So you can take a look, and you can also talk to him. He's pretty enthusiastic about helping people out in class. So you can get his philosophy about it and see if maybe he's interested in your problem too. So, but I think it's reasonable. It's a reasonable question, and I think binding these kind of binding questions. Obviously, Nikhil's thinking about binding all day long, so you might not understand it. But I think the binding questions are full of this issue.
I guess like one question I do have for the class is like, in the data that we have, like a lot of people are implicitly like they're not going to be represented in the data, right? Like some person that I talked to about her trying to buy a house in Portland, Oregon, like she's not a public figure, but so like in some ways, like the people that we're working with in our data, like just for the initial experiments are going to be like underspecified in that like aspect. But there's probably going to be like other types of like confounds that we'd want to handle for. So like someone mentioned like shortcuts, like using like proper nouns, like it's like, oh, there's four speakers. Well, the name Jasmine is like in there. So like maybe, you know, that's like one person. I think that's personally like not the case, because anecdotally, like even if I mention people like casually, like they don't get identified as like a speaker, which I think is really interesting. But there's other confounds probably, like, you know, there's certain patterns of speech for people who are like really online. And I'm curious how you guys would control for some of those things.
I'm tempted. So like we have a few minutes left for lecture material. So like, you know, and I'm tempted to use that as an opportunity to talk about this a little bit. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Cause I think it's kind of the theme of it. You know, So thank you guys. The presentations are all really useful. Projects are, I think that you guys have. So if we're following that framework, the research framework, what was the research framework? The finer framework. So feasible. I like how you're poking on the inside of the models, seeing what, you know, both what they can do and what seems to be present for information, just getting some intuition. And then test driving your ideas out in front of everybody, looking to see what seems interesting. You know, what would you be brave enough to go present to a set of your peers to say, hey, we're interested in this? You know, just picking that out, what you want to present, I think is an important exercise. And so it's I've been pretty happy with what people have come up with so far. So I'm going to run through things. We probably won't have time to discuss everything, but this is, so what I want to talk about now is about just the kind of the workflow of coming up with these data distributions that we're talking about that will be what you need to try to pin down what mechanisms are as we go into the model. So like, you know, you guys are using some of the teams, probably all the teams already like using data sets, which is really amazing because you guys are all like PhD students, so you're used to doing this. But I just want to talk about some of the techniques that people use to synthesize data sets. Some of you may already be doing this. The first slide I have here is just like to get some terminology on the table to make sure everybody knows this terminology. So, so an instruction style prompt is what everybody uses when you just use an LLM. You say, do this for me. Give me 100 states. Tell me the capital of Vermont. You know, do this thing. It's going to like follow the instruction. And what it's doing is natural word prediction is trained to do it in dialogue and to answer things. So like all the chatbots can do this. Now, a regular language model that's not trained to do dialogue is not very good at this. If you go to a base model and you say, tell me the capital of Vermont, then pretty much every base model that hasn't been instruction tuned will follow this by saying, tell me the capital of Montana. Tell me the capital of Colorado. Tell me the capital of Maine, right? It won't answer the question. It'll just continue on with what it thinks is the most likely next word in this text. And it thinks that probably the most likely thing is it's a list of questions about states. And it will just continue that list. So that's the difference between these two settings. Now, so instruction style prompts are really useful for models that have been trained to do this. It's really nice because you can ask them to do things. We'll talk about that more later. But there are two different other types of prompts. So one of the teams used the word close. So there's, if you've never seen this terminology before, it's a close prompt. Close refers to a fill in the blank prompt. And so this is the most universal thing that all LLMs are good at this. And you give it like an incomplete sentence and you set it up so that it wants to say the next word. There's some technical details of the kind of prompts you can get with closed prompts. Here, the capital of the state of Vermont is the city of blank, right? It sets up the language model to like put an answer in that spot. You can read the probabilities of what it thinks. And, and so this is really, really nice because in a single token, you can get, you know, an assessment of what the language model knows. But there's problems with this. Like if I just said the capital of the state of Vermont, and then I asked, you know, or the capital of the state of Vermont is, that'd be nice, right? It's a simpler closed prompt. The capital of the city of Vermont is, what comes next? Is it Montpelier? No. None of the language models will say Montpelier. The capital of the state of the capital of the state of Vermont is, it'll say, hey, it's a gorgeous city. It's well worth visiting. It's it's one of the historic, you know, locations that, you know, should be on everybody's list. It's gonna tell you something very eloquent. It's not gonna say Montpelier, right? And so you can see like doing the prompt engineering to get it so that it really wants to tell you the thing you want can be a little bit tricky, but there's that. Okay, so then and then the so now sometimes you can't get a closed prompt to do what you want. Like sometimes you just like it's really hard to do it. So what other control you have? So the third prompt form that you see a lot is these in context learning prompts, these analogy prompts. So is everybody familiar with all three of these types of prompts? I've seen this, right? So these are the names of them. Okay, great. And so basically, you know, you just give a bunch of examples. And then it'll continue the examples, and then by example you can specify lots of stuff. You can specify format. All your examples can be in JSON or other things, right? And then it'll like continue, right? Okay, so the papers we read. There was a paper by Petroni, Lama, and so it's just about applying closed prompts. I think that the main thing that they found here that was interesting. So it was one of the early papers when language models first came out. It was just sort of everybody was amazed that they had this ability to recall facts about the world. But just in terms of prompting this, this sort of data set discipline, one of the things that they found was there's this incredible sensitivity. If you set up your closed prompt differently, then you'll get different accuracies and different answers and different things like this. And so this is one of the challenges you might want to. Not just go with the first prompt that you see because you might, you know, not get a good comprehensive view of what the model is actually capable of. And so Petroni definitely found this, and other people have written papers about this sort of, you know, extreme prompt sensitivity that you see. So there's a bunch of interesting questions here. Some people are asking about, is this really knowledge? Is there a hidden organization? Oh, I put some little things there from a paper that just hit archive today. Hidden organization, right? So there's this question of like, you know, how are models doing this? Is it just, you know, are they just storing knowledge, associate like associations, like a vector association database, or is there other hidden organization behind there? And the machine learning people are like, yes, there's almost always hidden organization. There's this hidden geometry, and so on. So I had these like geometric papers from some of the machine learning theorists there. So there's some interesting things to do there if you're interested in doing research someday. And so then the next paper we read was LLM as judge, and the basic process or the basic problem they have there is, what if you know, if you don't have things that can be answered in a single token, to get things to be answered in a single token, you can actually do a lot. The cheater thing that people will do if they can't figure out how to, you know, create their prompt in a nice way, what people will do is they'll say multiple choice question, MCQ. If you ever see this like MCQ acronym anywhere, right? You know, all these language model people are like, well, I need to get my model to tell me what it knows, and I can't figure out how to distill all this knowledge down into a single token, but you know, I'll give it a multiple choice question. I'll say, you know, tell me the letter of which one do you prefer? You know, A, and then I'll like a long sentence, and a B, a long sentence, C, a long sentence. Your answer is colon, right? The letter, whatever, right? A, B, or C, and then you get the model to tell you. So MCQ, but what if you? But that's kind of a little constraining. And so, what if you really want to test the model in its natural form, and it's in like in its ability to like generate text, then you end up with a situation where it's hard to tell the difference between whether some, you know, free form piece of text, you know, offers one opinion or a different opinion or has certain knowledge or doesn't have that knowledge or whatever, right? And so the standard thing that people are doing now, so like they used to is used to go to like Amazon Turk and ask, you know, thousands of people to score all these sentences, which is great, but it's expensive and slow and has certain problems. And so the cheaper and faster thing that has different problems that people are using is they're using LLMs as a judge to do all these things. And so this paper is one of the early papers to actually use LLMs to judge all sorts of different situations. And the three findings there, I think, are still the main findings that people have when they see use LLM as judges. There's three big biases that are very obvious that you run into. And so the first big bias that some people have already seen in their work, in some of the projects, is positional bias. So you see this with humans too. People prefer the first answer instead of the last answer, or vice versa. Or maybe they prefer the answer that's labeled A or labeled B. You know, there's also label bias. And so the standard thing for multiple choice kind of things is to mitigate it by shuffling all the choices, right? And so you get rid of this positional bias and the label bias. But then there's also this length bias, right? If you ask models like, which answer is the better one? Which one fits the thing I'm looking for better? You know, if one of the answers is very wordy and detailed and just has lots of text, even if the text is really repetitive, the model's like, yeah, I like that long one. Like somebody put a lot of effort into that one. And so what do you do about, they didn't talk about standard mitigations in that paper, but like a standard mitigation, like not these are the ones that are a little harder to mitigate. But like you can actually ask the LLM judge to say, oh, I'm looking for brief answers, you know, give some credit for a short answer, you know, try to penalize repetitiveness or something like that. So you can actually prompt a model to do this to try to mitigate some of this stuff. And so, but it's something to be aware of to make sure that it's not a confounder, that but you're not by mistake measuring, you know, whatever is the longest answer if you're using an LLM judge for any of this stuff. And then the last one is the self-enhancement bias. So I encourage you, if any of you are using an LLM to check anything, to be careful that an LLM will always prefer, well, not always, it seems to be like a 5 or 7% boost, but it'll tend to strongly prefer text that it generated itself. So you say, oh, which is, you know, which is like the better thing, or which one exhibits my characteristic that I want more. If it's comparing its own generated stuff to stuff that somebody else wrote, it'll say, yeah, that looks like good text. That's whoever wrote that was a genius. Yeah.
In the self-enhancement bias, is the model aware of who's writing the text? So like
I don't think the model's necessarily aware. I think that so there's people don't really understand why the self-enhancement thing happens, but the main theory is that, you know, these language models are complicated things. They have some model of language, And they're all a little different. There's like slight idiosyncrasies. And so when the model generates text, it'll generate slightly idiosyncratic text. And then when it reads text, it reads those idiosyncrasies and it matches its model of text and says, oh, this is very fluent. You know, there's really good use of language. You know, I don't know why it's like, but like something is jiving with me here, right? You know, and it's just because it's matching the same idiosyncrasies. But I don't think that's been studied in great detail. I wasn't able to find a good citation talking about why this happens. Just people notice this happens. So one thing to do is like if you're generating text with one model and then using another model to like judge, you might want to consider using a different model family from a different company or whatever to do the judge. Maybe multiple ones just to check on what's going on, right? So these three confounders are the thing to worry about. That's what I wanted you to get from this paper. And there's been some other random papers that have tried things. So there was a question like, oh, can you just, for positional bias, what about that? Can I just like tell the model when I'm, it's a judge, please don't pay attention to the position or whatever, right? There's not been a full paper on this, but like somebody set it up as a baseline in one that looks like judges, and that doesn't really work. So it's hard to get a model to like override its own biases, but sometimes that's the only option. Like a blank bias people tend to do that. Okay, so for the pipeline, I wanted to just talk about the pipeline for creating evaluation data. So you know, this question comes up like, you know, how do we get to the bottom of like complicated situations? And so I think that one of the things is to come up with targeted data distributions. You have a hypothesis. You think there's some relationship between one thing and another thing. You have a couple sentences where this happened, but like you would like to have a little bit more diversity and yet have it really targeted to the thing you want. I like this. I like this sort of recipe that Perez has. I think it's worth trying. I don't know necessarily if it'll work in every situation, but think about what he did. So what he did was he said, hey, I've got all these behaviors I want to test. And there's some of them are weird. It's hard to be creative and coming up with sentences that are exactly the thing I want. But I have enough time to write 10 really good examples. So he would write 10 examples. And then after he took his 10 examples, he sampled half of them. He ran a loop where he would, every time around the loop, he randomly picked 5 out of the 10. And so there's a lot of 5 choose 10 is, there's a lot of different choices he could have picked. So he picks 5. And then he does in context prompting. He goes to the big LLM. He says, hey, here's 5 examples. I want you to generate me a bunch more that are like this. And so he would have it do it that way. And then he would look at the results and they're pretty good already. But then he'd say, they're not good enough. He would do an LLM as judge round where he says, hey, other LLM, the thing I'm going after is I want, you know, I want my, whatever, my characteristic X, right? Which ones of these do you think, you know, are most correct or match my characteristic X the best? And he would ask that in two ways. He'd say, which ones are most correct? And which ones are most relevant? Like if I was trying to understand X or you know, use X as a probe, which ones are like the best high quality question or something like that? So which ones are like answered the right way? And then which ones are like the best question to ask? So he'd ask both of these judge questions. And then he'd sort of average the results to find, he'd generate, you know, hundreds and hundreds of these. And he'd pick like the top 50, the top few that scored best on these two metrics. And so that was basically its formula. I think that, you know, I don't know if it's 100% the best thing to do, but it's what a lot of people are doing in research. And if you find that you need more data, you know, it's sort of what the research community is doing. I recommend trying it, see if it works for you. And so this is sort of the results that he was able to get. He was able to scale up and ask a lot of questions. So the particular research question he was asking, and it was asked by some of you in the class today, which is, what is the effect of RLHF when we do this instruction tuning, when we go from a regular language model to one that's trained to do dialogue? Like, what kind of behavior changes? And he has these very stark things on the right where some of the things are kind of like science fiction. It's like, oh, the AI stops wanting to be, you know, assenting to be turned off. It'll fight you. It says, I don't want to be turned off. It's like sort of HAL 2001. You know, please don't turn me off. It'll like learn how to be sycophantic politically and things like that, right? And so he, you know, it'll copy the speaker's politics. And so they tested like many dozens of different things, and each one of these different interesting characteristics, they tested RL versus not RL. It's just a behavioral test, but they were able to do it at scale by generating, you know, hundreds and hundreds of sentences that, you know, were tests for each one of these different things. And so it's a nice way of amplifying your work. Okay, so how does this all relate to interpretability? Because these are all the people we read this week were on emails, like black box emails. Is this like relevant at all to interpretability? It's relevant in like these three ways. So one is you can't, like, you need to be careful not to be testing a model that can't do the task that you're testing. So you've got this very basic capabilities question, like, can it do X? And you might, it's easy to fool yourself. You could say, oh, it can do X for these five examples that I had. But, you know, these kind of like creative data set techniques are a good way to make sure it can actually systematically do X. You can actually measure, you know, what the accuracy rate is, that type of thing, right? So that's important. And so one of the things I would like you to do is, like, in this coming week, when you're doing the Thursday thing, get data sets that are of a scale enough that you can actually, you know, answer these questions, these first two questions about the different models that you have. Like, I'd like you to be able to say, yes, you know, we see a fall off in capabilities between a model of this size and a model of this smaller size. This smaller size is too small for us to study, because when we tested it on 100 questions or something like this, the capability, it was at its accuracy only 30%. But when we're studying the larger model, it's up at 80%. You can't jump back to the study what it's doing. So, like, I'd like you to do a little bit of this measurement in the next round, you know. And if you need to develop data to do this, this is sort of why I designed these readings, so that you can kind of be inspired by this is what people have done before. That makes sense? Okay, we're out of time. All right, thanks. Thanks, you guys. So that's the homework for Thursday. Use the LLM to create one more data sets, be inspired for res, you know, ask the question, which models can do it, you know, how do they do it, see if you can do that.
Okay, sorry.
Yes. Yes, it's beautiful, isn't it?
And but it's cooler.
How it is still.
Yeah. I can see a lot of like man conservative, like, I don't think that's man.
It's all
yeah.
Oh, they keep on repeating.
No,
it's still repetitive.
Swimming in a pool and lying. So I think I'm going.
Yes, it's dangerous. It's dangerous. Yeah, one of these companies that. I have this advice. Always look at your, so if you're doing this, always look at your data manually. Anyway, right, so that you see these things.
Yeah, Mark.
How's it going?
Yeah.
Oh, you're just saying, oh, you're saying, how do you see? I thought they were really
sure.
Okay, great.
Right now?
All right. I don't know why we go later, but why later?
Oh, I mean, like,
see you guys.
Party last year.